Terra Tuamas. Willkommen. Willkommen. Satanati. I've been practicing that word all feast. Tervetuola. Greetings, my friends, from the various nations here. Estonia, Latvia, Sweden, Germany, the USA, New Zealand, and Canada. And forgive me if I forget anybody, but I'm getting older. Welcome to the last day of the Feast of Tabernacles. For the most part, what I have to say has already been said, but it always bears repeating. That's why we repeat the holy days year by year, the Passover year by year. We have all gathered to learn more of the ways of God and what is expected of us now and into the future. What kind of leaders should we be? We've heard about being spiritual leaders, servant leaders. Long before the start of the New Testament church, Christ, the God of the Old Testament, called ancient Israel to a great calling, but Israel was missing something. In Deuteronomy 5:29, I'm just going to read that out of my notes. Deuteronomy 5:29, "Oh, that they had such a heart in them, that they might fear me and always keep my commandments, that it might be well with them and with their children forever." Israel did not have a right heart. They did not have a right spirit in them. Each of us, though, has been called to a special calling. In 1 Corinthians 1, 26 to 27, 1 Corinthians 1, 26 to 27, and again I will read that out of my notes. "For you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called, but God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things which are mighty." Each of us has a high calling. I'd like to make a comment on servant leadership. Christ is the originator of servant leadership. And in Matthew 13:15, he talks to the people that lest their eyes be opened, there would have to be a healing. Christ came to heal people. Christ gives us a mission too. We are all in a healing process. We've heard the stories about people that have suffered through the years, both out of the United States and in the United States. The title of my split sermon is "The Heart of a Servant." In the United States, I heard of one tragedy not long ago, and it was about a little girl. When she was 3 hours old, she was thrown into a trash bin. A mere 3 hours, and she was abandoned by her mother. But she was adopted by a family and taken in. And the story I read was that she was graduating from high school just recently. That depicts to me the tragedies of life. It's a culmination of how people suffer from the very beginning, and many of you know what that suffering was like. My reaction to this when I first heard it, because I thought of this many years ago because of things that had happened in my own life, I thought of the scriptures where anciently it said of Jerusalem in Ezekiel 16, 4 to 5, and I will again read this from my notes, Ezekiel 16, 4 to 5. "As for your nativity, on the day you were born, your navel cord was not cut, nor were you washed in water to cleanse you. You were not rubbed with salt, nor wrapped in swaddling cloths. No eye pitied you to do any of these things for you, to have compassion on you, but you were thrown out into the open field when you yourself were loathed on the day you were born." How many of us have felt that through our years? A second tragedy I heard about was about a young woman by the name of Kim Meter, who at the tender age of 8 years of age witnessed her father shooting her mother and then committing suicide. Ultimately, this woman founded a sanctuary for abused horses. But later, she also realized that there were children suffering too. And she took these suffering children and brought them into the sanctuary for the horses, and the children bonded with the horses. But as they bonded with the horses, the children were in a process of healing their own pains and suffering. So many of us, if we just think about our agony and our suffering, we cry and we mourn, but we don't recover. The best way to get out of it is to help others, to be of service to others. And that's our calling. Those are just a few of the agonizing problems in our society. What can we do? And what does all this have to do with servant leadership? I have a definition of servant leadership. The heart of a servant and servant leadership is obedience to and service to God with a right heart and helping in the healing process of a suffering mankind separated from God. Biblically, what is meant by this word servant or servant leadership? The words servant appear about 500 times in the Bible. In the New Testament, it appears 100 times, and some of the words are diakonos. And diakonos could be translated as servant, deacon, minister. Every one of us, in a sense, is a servant. There's also a word for servant from doulos, and it means to be a servant or a slave to Jesus Christ. That is the kind of servant and leadership person we should be. We would be a slave to Jesus Christ, but it is not like being in the world a slave to bondage of mankind. When we think about the trials that I've mentioned, do we realize what it says in Ezekiel 9:4? And this has been mentioned before. Put a mark on the foreheads of the men who sigh and cry for the pains of mankind. Each of us, like the people around us, has seasons of laughter and seasons of tears. There's times we are joyful and the times we are utterly broken. There's a lot more tears and angst today among many people. We live in an age where people don't get the proper healing for their hurts. Not just for physical healing, but their spiritual disease and sickness. For too many people, our hope for healing dwells in entertainment, pleasures, politics, and magicians, and not in obedience to God. It's important to remember that with any spiritual plan we have in our own minds, that Satan will be there to try to derail you. As we go into the future, we recognize we will have difficulties after the feast, but we should be reminded of the messages that we heard here, that we can see it through. And God has promised never to forsake or leave us. As we grow through the years, and I've been in the church for over 40 years now, hopefully each of us grows year by year and makes improvements along the way. It seems like we read the Bible and we learn as we go. We look back and we say, wow, was that in there? And it's just surprising. It's been in there all the while and we haven't always seen it. Let's consider, and this has already been mentioned, and I won't dwell too long on it, Consider the examples of the disciples in the early days of the ministry of Christ. Christ had this to say about his disciples, which is also a warning to us. And you don't need to turn there, but in Mark 10:35-40, "Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him saying, 'Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask.' And he said to them, 'What do you want me to do for you?' And they said, 'Grant us that we may sit one on your right hand and the other on your left.' And Christ said, 'You don't know what you ask for, but you will have opportunity for that.' He says, 'You will drink the cup that I drink.' And we know that the apostles later suffered. The other ten, when they heard this message, they were troubled by it. But I wonder, how troubled were they? Were they just upset because James and John asked first? Was it something that they wanted to? They wanted to be preeminent among the disciples? How many of us want to have preeminence? Christ explained that those positions were not for him to give. We're all familiar with the example of the service where Christ, just before his crucifixion, stooped down like a common servant and gave the example of foot washing, which is another example of one's commitment to be a servant. For us, it is an outward step. For them, the disciples at that time missed the point. As those called to be a kingdom of priests, we don't serve just to be seen. There is to be mercy and sacrifice and justice in the way we think and the way we act. We need more than tradition. We need substance in our lives. We need more than an outward appearance. We need a clean inner heart. And we should have that clean inner heart even when we're not noticed by others. So many people just like to show what they have to do. Each of us is truly a servant and a leader when we consider our calling as first fruits. In the church, our choices, our decisions, and our examples as servants and leaders can have long-term effects on the spiritual and physical aspects of those around us. How many of us are tempted to go off in a different direction? This is not in my notes, and my apology to Antra, that in Phoenix, a little lady looked at me one time when I had given a message, and she said to me, she said, "Joe, whenever I see you, I know everything is okay." And at that time, I was tempted to drift, and I knew I could not do that. Christ, in Matthew 23:11-12, had this to say, Matthew 23:11-12, "But he who is greatest among you shall be your servant, and whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." Then beginning in verses 13-36, and I'm not going to read that, you could read that later, verses 13-36, Christ gives several warnings to the Pharisees and others. But let me just read this out of verse 23. "Woe to you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone." The Pharisees, as maybe so many of us could do, as maybe I could do, they put a hedge of burdens around the law. Sometimes Pharisees, and sometimes we, can be so hung up on tradition, we snuff out goodness. The Pharisees were more interested in their traditions, in being seen and being in positions of authority. They were this way so much that they neglected and forgot the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy. Anciently, we've heard the stories about Solomon, Rehoboam, and Jeroboam. Solomon was called the wisest man in the world in 1 Kings 4:34. And of Solomon, it has this to say, and I'm just going to read verse 1 Kings 3:7. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David, but I am as a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. Do we have that attitude? For all his greatness, this is an important concept to remember. Solomon had a flaw and a lack of character to do the right thing, even when he should have come to know better. Leadership, according to one writer, and I believe it was Robert Greenleaf, leadership can be too heady for people, and they may say, look at how great I am. Then there is a warning in 1 Kings 9:4 to Solomon. It says, now if you walk before me as your father David walked, in integrity of heart and in uprightness, to do all that I have commanded you, and if you keep my statutes and my judgments. However, we know that Solomon allowed his many wives to lead him astray in false worship. Even today, I know of people in Phoenix that others bring to mind. They go astray. They think about other things that people have done and what they're doing, and they let them influence them in drifting away from God. I've seen people drift year by year, slowly and step by step. Godly leadership is knowing what to do and doing it, no matter the circumstances. There's also the examples of Rehoboam and Jeroboam. Following the reign or the death of Solomon, Rehoboam came to power, but he wouldn't listen to wise counsel. He put a burden, a heavier burden on people. This is what society is like. We have a tyranny of the left and a tyranny of the right and tyrannies in between. And mankind continues to suffer. Rehoboam added burdens to the people. So along comes Jeroboam, to put it simply. He had some good ideas, but then something went wrong with him. In 1 Kings 12:31 to 33, Jeroboam made shrines on the high places and made priests of every class of people who were not of the sons of Levi. Jeroboam ordained a feast on the 15th day of the 8th month, rather than the 15th day of the 7th month. So he set up his own form of worship to retain power. And he devised things in his own heart to retain power. And then Israel fell into idolatry through the years. Then God could no longer use him. Jeroboam wanted power, glory, and prestige, but he would get none of these. He wanted to be in place of eminence and willingly set up false feast, false worship, in place of God's ordained feast. We have all heard the expression, all have gone astray, and there is none righteous. In the book of Kings and Chronicles, we read a litany of backsliding, half-hearted leaders kings and misguided people. Sometimes people have some good ideas, but often their ideas become blended with evil. As a side note, there's another tragedy I read about. Michael Reagan was the adopted son of the past U.S. President Ronald Reagan. He was adopted when he was 3 days old, after he was born March 18, 1945. By the age of 8 years of age, he thought God hated him because he had been abandoned and he was from an adulterous relationship. He was illegitimate. And he thought God hated him. He felt abandoned at an early age, never having known his real parents. At the time of his birth, he could have been aborted. It was illegal back then, but it happened all too often. Of course, it happens much often now than it ever happened before. His older new sister ran to her piggy bank when he was brought to the home of the Reagans and gave the adoption lady 97 cents for her little brother. But she really wanted an older brother to play with. Michael Reagan, at 8 years old, was confronted with the reality of his life, and he tried reading the Bible back then, and he realized he was illegitimate, and he thought God hated him. How many of us, before we came into the church, thought God hated us? Thought that there was nothing out there for us? We felt discouragement. During this time, there was a hole in his life, and he did not read the Bible for another 30 years. And he realized, sometime afterwards too, he had been molested by a camp counselor. And it was a secret that he kept for many years. And it was another reason he thought God hated him. He sabotaged every relationship he had until he realized the hole in his heart needed to be filled by the healing power of God. The failings of so many examples in the Bible and of problems today brings us to a brief but important discussion of humility. A man who appears to be on top and to be a leader and a servant may not be a leader and a servant in the eyes of God. As we read the examples of many in the Bible, we realize that power often does go to the head and it corrupts. Mankind can not seem to control his very actions. Too much talent, beauty, money often will cause people to think more of themselves than they should. One writer said this: surely, leadership grounded in charisma, which is what so many want to advocate, inevitably becomes misleadership. In the last century, wrong leadership, not rooted in humility, was responsible for the deaths of anywhere between 50 to 100 million people. Are we marching towards those days again? God knows when, but it is inevitable for mankind to repeat errors. We need to be close to God. Let's ponder a few moments on humility. Proverbs 3:7. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. Also in Isaiah 5:21, it says, woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight. In Psalm 10:17, Lord, you have heard the desire of the humble. You will prepare their heart. You will cause your ear to hear. Before King David, Saul was given an opportunity to rule. Saul had a proper view of himself at one point. But God had this to say in 1 Samuel 15:17-19. So Samuel said, "When you were little in your own eyes, were you not head of the tribes of Israel?" And in verse 19, "And did not the Lord anoint you king over Israel?" Actually, 19 is here. "Why then did you not obey?" Later, Samuel had to anoint David as king. We know the rest of that story, and that's in 1 Samuel 16:6-7. Right now, the world needs a healing. And what is our response to tragedies around us? I was discussing in Phoenix with some people about reconciliation. And they say the term reconciliation got blurred when we discussed compassion. Is that true? Reconciliation needs to include compassion. Would I, as an individual, be part of the problems of the world and act in a manner that helps the healing process? Or would I look the other way? Or would I try to impose certain beliefs that are not scriptural on others? It says in Ezekiel 34:1-5, that God brings them low who oppose him. Let me read that from my notes. "And the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel, and prophesy and say to them, Thus says the Lord God to the shepherds, Woe to the shepherds of Israel who feed themselves. Should not the shepherds feed the flocks? You eat the fat and clothe yourselves with the wool. You slaughter the fatlings, but you do not feed the flock. The weak you have not strengthened, nor have you healed those who were sick, nor bound up the broken, nor brought back what was driven away, nor sought what was lost. But with force and cruelty you have ruled them, so that they were scattered because there was no shepherd." Each of us, in a sense, is like a spiritual shepherd in training. Shepherds can be spiritual or physical leaders, leading people astray by the tragic blending of evil with good. I'm sure we all know the stories, how people have some good ideas, but they blend it with evil. And they lose people, they lose friends, they lose themselves along the way of following God. Remember this. Satan did not tell all falsehoods. And you could read of that in Genesis 3. In reality, Satan was the master of deceit. By contrast, Christ is spoken of as the good shepherd in John 10:11-16. And I'm not going to turn there. You could read that entire chapter. But he's called the good shepherd who deals kindly and with mercy and brings a healing and a binding. Christ is coming as King of Kings and Lord of Lords with power and might. But it says this concerning the story of Lazarus in John 11:33. And I'm not going to turn there. John 11:33-35. When you read the story of Lazarus, one of the shortest scriptures says, Christ wept. He cried because the people were hurting. Do we cry? Do we sigh and cry for the hurts of others? Not just self. Let me read this from Psalm 147:3. He heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. The Lord lifts up the humble. He casts the wicked down to the ground. And that's verse 6. And verse 11, the Lord takes pleasure in those who fear Him, in those who hope in His mercy. In conclusion, we can be servants in the healing process of those like the 3-hour newborn baby who was cast off into a garbage bin. Like the woman who, as an 8-year-old, saw her father kill her mother and then kill himself. Or the young boy who was put up for adoption, later sexually molested by a camp counselor, and then went through most of his early life thinking God hated him. We won't turn there, but it's a reminder. We read in Ecclesiastes, it's a time for this and a time for that. One of the things it says in Ecclesiastes 3:3, it speaks of a time for healing. We can and will be a part of the healing process now and into the kingdom of God. We have to be part of the healing process now if we want to be in the kingdom. We can't be just doctrinaire. We have to be able to lift and feel compassion for people around us. We must look at the examples of those called by God in the Bible. Leaders of the Bible are not always the strongest, the most educated, the best businessmen. Christ called fishermen, scholars, a physician, farmers, herdsmen, shepherds, and ordinary people, like many of us. God wants people to be true servants. He wants His people over time to be growing, to be faithful, humble, quietly and meekly serving. He wants them continuously exhibiting a kind and gentle demeanor without attempting to place themselves into the limelight. We need to be as a light of a city on a hill. We look forward to the return of Christ, which will ultimately bring forth the servants of the Lord at the last trump, the sons of God, and a healing of this world's wounded and suffering and those separated from God.